Well, hello again, everybody. I'm here with the great Jackson, and we're going to have a bit of banter. Whoa, what the fuck is that? I'm going to have a bit of banter about the state of England. Am I coming over and writing a chat there? Can everybody hear us? Chat's not moving very fast, like. All right, so how are you doing, Jackson?
Yeah, I'm fucking magic, mate. How you been?
I'm all right, busy, just busy. All right, we're on the go. Can everybody in the chat hear? Yeah, Aria's there. We can hear you. I've got an advert on my own live hangout, like cheeky bastards. Right. So how are you doing, Jackson? From the big smoke, the last of the Cockneys. I've wanted to have a chat with you for a while, to be honest.
Yeah, no, it's been long overdue, isn't it? I mean, it's just, well, you know, actually having a job and all that, it's a bit hard to fucking find time where we sync up.
Yeah, that's been the problem, hasn't it? We work different hours and stuff like that. And it is like a funny thing because we are both a bit rough. I think that was why so many people wanted us to have a hangout, because they're both a bit rough and ready and working class. But yeah, I'm up in the middle of nowhere, me, and you're down there. You're in the heart of the diversity itself, the heart of Babylon. How are you surviving down there?
Fucking barely. It is an absolute shithole. And the thing is, as well, is like what you've got with the media is what they do tell you doesn't really compare to what they're not telling you, because. If you sort of scratch the surface a little bit here and you see this new thing with the knife crime, every day there's a stabbing, there's a fucking stabbing. It's been going on forever.
And it's really hit the news this week because of that Jody Chesney, but he's got like an Eastern European name. I don't know if it's confirmed that he was an urban youth or like an Eastern immigrant. I'm not sure what he was. Well, there's been talk of sending in the army and stuff, hasn't there?
Well, at this point, I think the fucking state of our forces, the urban utes, are probably better equipped.
But, and they've got trannies in the army as well.
Oh, yeah, excellent.
The army's just as diverse as London is. Or that, at least that's the plan. I mean, it's depressing to get into it, but I cannot believe just the unmitigated bullshit coming from the sort of the lefty Labour camp about why this happens. That's what I always pay attention to, because if you just get sort of concentrate on the stabbings themselves, well, in this case, I only paid attention because there was a white girl. Who was he? That Gary Young in The Guardian. He was complaining like, oh, well, now that a 17-year-old white girl's been stabbed, everybody cares. Everybody's it's a national emergency. And I thought, yeah, that's actually true. Tough, really.
Well, this is the thing, is it's been scum killing scum for as long as it's been going on, since the sort of formation of Operation Trident. It's always been gangs, 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 gangs. And then you are getting the fucking, the white people sort of spilling over. You had that that fella on the train, I think it was New Year's, bloke just out with his son getting stabbed to death. And now you had that poor little girl in Camberwell getting stabbed to death. And yeah, that's the sort of stories people are going to pay attention to. It's when it fucking goes over to collateral damage.
So where she got stabbed in Romford, is that diverse? What's that area like? Is that rough?
Is it Romford? I thought it was. I might have had my wires crossed. I was thinking of Camberwell, because Camberwell is a fucking absolute ghetto.
Right.
But I think Romford's more sort of over towards the Essex way. It's a little bit. Well, last time I was in Essex, it was a bit whiter. But you're starting to see the urban creep spreading out a little bit.
Yeah. So, like, my impression was that the old Cockneys all moved out. They went to Essex and started to vote UKIP. That's right. And now it's starting to catch them up again.
Well, it's Essex and Kent mainly, because I didn't actually grow up in London. All my sort of immediate family, especially on my father's side, they're all, sort of grew up in Deptford, Brick Lane. Back when it was more the sort of only fools and horses era, when there was the sort of the little bit of creep, the sort of start of this fucking multicultural nightmare.
Yeah, I mean, Only Fools and Horses was in Peckham, wasn't it? I mean, God, I even up here, I've heard that Peckham's like a total shithole now. I mean, Trigger and Del Boy and what was the other one called? Boise. That's all just completely gone now. It's really sad. They've all been just chased out, and it was celebrated as they did it as well.
Yeah, that's the most egregious thing about them is the sort of Cockneys. I mean, I know fucking loads of them. It's where I sort of picked up my dialect from. But all of the Cockneys I ever really met were in Kent. There's none of them in East London anymore. If you go down to a marketplace in East London, if you go, say fucking, let's say Tower Hamlets, you're more likely to hear the call to prayer to a fuck than a market seller. Selling fruits and vegetables. That's the sort of state that it is.
It's the same as, I mean, I haven't watched EastEnders for donkey's years, but from what I can gather, it's still actually quite white. Where that's supposed, well, that's obviously in the East End. But the thing is, what I think's interesting about that, so this is like this big soap opera on the BBC, but and everybody says, well, they crow, but if it's like a program about vets in the Scottish Highlands, they'll make it like 60% diverse, but then they'll have the same diversity quota for EastEnders. And I think it's because they don't want to show, because then the rest of the country is going to see what the East End of London is actually like. If that was like a true representation of the East End of London, all these whites across Britain would shit themselves and think, Christ almighty, is this heading our way? So they've got to kind of bullshit a bit and say, well, it's not that bad. They're just sort of they'll be like a middle class Turk or something like that.
Yeah, you're getting all that. I mean, I don't personally watch it, but like, when the missus has been watching it or something, and I've sort of poked my head around and have a look at it, you've got like the creep of the Muslim families coming in, and it's still a majority white, but it's like the thing with the frog in the boiling water. If you put a frog in boiling water, it will jump out. If you heat the water while the frog is in there, it won't notice. And that seems to be what they're doing, rather than going full on in your face multicultural bullshit. With EastEnders anyway, they do it everywhere else, but
And in Barking and Dagenham, I remember that. So that was when I kind of was getting into nationalism a bit and really starting to take notice of things, was the famous BNP campaign in Barking and Dagenham. Where Billy Bragg turned up to protest against the BNP, even though he lived in a mansion in Dorset, but he was from there. But he himself was a white fighter. And then when the sort of remaining working class whites tried to vote their way out via the BNP, it became this sort of battleground. And there was a echoey Labour MP there called Margaret Hodge, I think it was. And basically, it was a real battle, and they were shipping in, literally shipping in busloads of Somalians and stuff for the votes, and they smashed the white working class vote in Barking and Dagenham, until to the point where Nick Griffin said, "We just can't win there. You can't. We don't physically have the numbers anymore to win there." And they did it within a sort of two, like 18 months. And it's one of, you can look it up on Wikipedia. And the lefties, like Hope Not Hate, they celebrate it. They call it the Battle of Barking and Dagenham. But all they did was ship in so many foreigners that the working class whites who are shifting towards BNP were just completely outnumbered. And this, it beggars belief, really, that they did that. And today, I think it's about 25 to 30% white.
so that's essentially the exact same situation as London. Now that we've had Sadiq Khan through the, well, it was either Sadiq Khan or Zach Goldsmith. So talk about fucking rock and a hard place. But now that London has reached that sort of tipping point of demographic, I don't think you've got any chance of a sort of a formation of local councils with any, not even conservative, and our conservatives are in no fucking way nationalist. But I don't think, especially in London, you're ever going to get a resurgence of the BNP, because demographics tend to go one way, you know, without, well, intervention.
Yeah.
It's going to be the whites that are moving out and the others that are going to be breeding and breeding and voting in their own. And, you know, in this glorious democracy of ours, and everyone gets what they vote for, unless you're fucking white, yeah, there's no sort of reversing that.
Nobody's ever voted for this as well. It's insane. I just wanted to point out there's a bit of a big thing just happened in the chat there. I've just seen that I've had my first ever super chat by Monty Fontaine. Have a pint, mate. Thanks for all the excellent commentary. Thank you very much there. A milestone moment. First ever super chat. What do you think of that? That's brilliant, isn't it?
Thank you, much, mate.
So one of the things that I wanted to get into was the excuses around knife crime as well, and how ridiculous it is, and that they're, because of course they shipped all these people in and to say these are the heart surgeons and brain surgeons, they're going to pay for our pensions, but it turns out that if they don't have snooker tables, they're going to stab people to death in the streets.
These poor people were suffering from a chronic ping pong table deficiency. That's what's driving them to madness.
That's the narrative, isn't it? The narrative is that if the urban youth don't have enough ping pong tables, they're going to stab strangers to death in the streets for fucking nothing. I mean, you know, my dad, every Christmas, this is the thing, I was walking the dog today and I thought of this, because my dad likes to tell a story every Christmas, that when he woke up, when he was 8 years old, he woke up, lived in a pit town, and he woke up on Christmas morning, ran downstairs to see what presents he had, and do you know what he had for his main Christmas present? A tree branch painted silver and an apple. And he never ever went out and fucking stabbed somebody. A tree branch painted silver. That was your Christmas present in a cool town in the north. Stab someone to death.
Oh, no, it's all a big misunderstanding. They're just practicing their heart surgery. You know, they're so fucking generous, these people. They don't even ask you if you want heart surgery. They come up, they do it for fucking free. That'll be the next fucking narrative.
So I watched Owen Jones was trending on Twitter, and he made this big, because it was question time, and he made this big, like, impassioned speech about how it was all of these, you know, they didn't have enough ping pong tables, so they were killing each other. and it's one of those things where you think the establishment's narrative is so shit that you can grant them all of these points. You can say, I don't even have to try and refute that, because what you're saying here is that the diversity that you've imported is so barbaric that they're going to kill people if they don't have ping pong tables. I mean, is this really what you're telling the country here? Is this what we're celebrating?
Diversity is our strength. But what they didn't really account for either is we get caught in the middle of it. But if you go somewhere in North London like Camden, diverse as it is, I don't know what the composition is. I know there's a shit ton of Bangladeshis, Pakistanis and Somalians. And they're all at fucking war with each other. It's, you mix everyone in, expect them to get on, fine. No, they're not. Everyone is enclaved off and they are all at war with each other. The Somali gangs are fucking fighting the Bangladeshi gangs. The Bangladeshi gangs are fighting it's a vicious fucking triangle. And there's absolutely no fucking way that I think, I mean, it's full damage control at the moment. It's not a case of you know, these, I don't believe these politicians are as stupid as they appear. I don't, maybe with the exception of Diane Abbott, but yeah, I don't think they're as stupid as they appear at all. I mean, they go to these top fucking universities and yeah, they're echoey and all that, but you know, these aren't stupid people. They know what's going to happen if you put a load of fucking Somalians next to a load of Bangladeshis. I mean, you can look at sort of the history between those communities and know that they famously don't get on. Or it's one of the other ones. It might be the Bangladeshis. I can't remember exactly which ones it was. But there's no way that they have done this by accident. That's my sort of theory here. I think they don't give a fuck about the consequences. It all comes down to the vote.
Well, I mean, well, the thing is, the Tories aren't even getting the vote. The Tories aren't. I mean, it's weird, you know. I remember when I was a school kid, and it was like the end of the Thatcher era. That's how old I am. I could actually name most of the politicians in that. You had like Douglas Hurd, John Major, Kenneth Clark, Margaret Thatcher. Nigel Lawson, and yet today, and I'm immersed in this all of the time. I'm like totally into politics and what's going on in the country, and I haven't really got much of a clue who's in the Tory party, because after a while it just doesn't seem to matter. I know that Savi Javid's in it as Home Secretary, but that's only because he sticks out. And I know that Amber Rudd was there before him, but that's because she wanted to jail people for reading the Daily Stormer. So that kind of stuck out at me as well. But other than that, I haven't got a clue who like the main politicians are. They're just bureaucrats, and it's so obvious that it becomes irrelevant. And, well, you do have a bit of a kind of loose cannon with Corbyn's Labour. I mean, that's such a mess that it is kind of entertaining
it's funny as fuck.
Yeah.
But this is the thing. This is how bad it's getting, is that I'm looking at Jeremy Corbyn and looking at fucking Theresa May and thinking, is he that much worse? I mean, you know, he could be a bit of a wild card. It's not like we've got any other sort of firebrands out there. I mean, the closest we've got is Jacob Rees-Mogg, and he's just a complete fucking disappointment as well.
Yeah, he's totally overrated. They're working on this thing where, let's say, like the chat that's going on here now, all the comments at my blog, that as it stands now, the people who write the comments are responsible for what they write. And that's kind of okay with me, because you don't have to do much. But what they're working on now is where it's called the online forums bill. And if you're... say, if I'm hosting a blog with a comment section, I'm responsible for what's going on in the comments. And because I've got to go to work and everything, and you cannot be by the computer all the time, basically that's the end of the comment section, because anybody could pop in. You could have like a hope not hate Antifa type come in and make some stupid comments, you know, really racist, inciting violence and all the rest of it, and I'm then responsible for that. So what it really is just a way to kill the comment sections. And Jacob Rees-Mogg is fully on board with that, fully on board with it. And he opposed, and he spoke out against the Enoch Powell. So I'm not impressed. I'm not impressed with this kind of high Tory twattery whatsoever. They just come across like a bunch of pompous wankers, and they've got just the same contempt for us as what they've always had. So, yeah, fuck them too.
Yeah, and I think Jacob Rees-Mogg, as I remember as well, he also signed Article 13, which essentially means if you use... oh, I can't remember the exact wording of it, but I know it's going to be an absolute shit show. If you use, like, footage or something that's not yours... I think it's like a sort of automatic copyright claim, and I think you have to pay for it or something like that. I mean, it's going through the EU courts now, and for this great fucking Eurosceptic to be signing it is...
Yeah. And it's up to like Sargon of Akkad and Count Dankula to save the internet in Europe.
Oh, fucking hell. Well, if it goes as well as it did with the Liberalists, I think... might as well just delete our fucking channels now.
Wow, it's yeah. You've just got to. It's sad, but you've got to wish them the best, or we're all screwed, really. I was having a look at the UKIP manifesto before as well. I was thinking about making a video on it, but maybe we'll get another time. But one of the things I was wondering was, because you're a devout Catholic, aren't you?
Yeah.
Was it living in Babylon that turned you onto that, or was it from outside of London, or was it just looking at the horror show of London where you thought, good God, I need something more in my life than this?
Well, I sort of got to the point of being more politically authoritarian when I sort of got to see what people do without order. We like to think that, you know, in some society, some anarchist society, everyone is good and moral and the homeless will be homed and the hungry will be fed. No, it's not the fucking case. If you take authority out of something, people will literally fuck each other in front of you. I've seen it. It's not pleasant. But the thing that got me most into the sort of towards the more sort of ethno-nationalist side was when I moved to London, and within, I think, a year and a half, I had a fight with a gentleman of colour. And presuming, after all the time of living in Kent, that the same rules still applied, had a straight up fist fight. I didn't hit him on the ground. I let him get up. I let him walk off. The fucker repaid me by stabbing me four times. So that was the kind of awakening there. And then when you sort of move into the workforce and you get into the city, and then you realize that, you know, the government doesn't see you as a human so much as it does as a fucking national insurance number. And then that's essentially what you're paying for. And that actually does tie in with quite a few biblical prophecies, but that's a whole different discussion.
Because, I mean, London is, like, it's not just that it's became a sort of, like, a sort of global capital centre since, say, Tony Blair came to power. It does have history, doesn't it? It is, like, the seat of the money power for a long, long time. And the English take a lot of shit for that as well, by the way. It is interesting that you are literally in the spiritual heart of darkness in London, but it's probably too early to get into that. I'll have to sink a few more whiskeys first.
Oh fuck yeah! No, it is genuinely grim, and it sort of, well, it forced the political awakening, because before that I was very much a civic nationalist. You know, I was UKIP, anti-race. I didn't see a difference between the races. But then it just got to a fucking point where I couldn't ignore it. It's like we're being mixed with people who are just so fucking different from us. You know, there's no sort of unity there. There's certain common ground, like the whole Catholicism thing. And I get a load of shit from fucking, you know, some of the sort of pagans and the hardcore ethno-nationalists, but you know, I've got more sort of in common with I've got that unifying thing with a black Catholic, but then you've got the rest of them, and then it's like apples and fucking oranges. They just don't go. We don't mix.
Yeah. And was it just the racial stuff, or just the general degeneracy in society, just the gay agenda and the tranny agenda? Because everything's been broken down, isn't it? It's just this ennui where it's just like a decomposing body, really, where everything is just breaking down. And I can understand, because, I mean, I've spoken about it before, but I do see a sort of return in to the right of people who are more what they would call reactionary, neo-reactionary, and looking for some sort of religious, spiritual thing. And Catholicism does dominate that. And it fascinates me as well. I'm really interested in it, how this is going. And I think it's a good thing as well. But it is a trend. And one of the things, it reminds me of that thing where it's a cult of the dead, but that's not meant as an insult. It's just this stage of civilization where there's a kind of furious backlash back towards something more mystical and spiritual and outside of the material world. The Iranian Revolution or the Taliban come to mind, and I'm not speaking as some sort of liberal which frowns on that. I'm viewing it from the right, as like say the Iranian Revolution being a kind of legitimate form of protest against the world. I mean, I really am. That's how far gone I am. I can kind of understand it, to be honest.
It does. It does completely fuck you up when you look at, you hear these stories about, Iran has just sentenced two people for 10 years in prison for having gay sex, and you just think, oh well, never mind. That's the sort of way it gets to you, because when these sort of reactionary things come about, it's normally when it's an attack on the family, because this is what it is. It's trying to break humans down into the base individual, make them fucking childish. I say humans, I mean mostly whites, because it's really only happening in the white countries. But the goal seems to be just to fucking break them down into the smallest possible atoms, no family, no wife, no children to propagate, and then they're just easily conquered.
Yeah, that is what they're doing. But and there, I think that they're betting the farm on that Islam will itself deteriorate. That Islam will be kind of poisoned by liberalism itself, because we're used to looking at Islam from a sort of liberal perspective, but you can actually look at it from a perspective of a reactionary force. Will Islam hold the line against the modern world, or is the future of humanity to be just this grid of units producing the stuff for a profit? And I don't know. And it's a pretty sad state of affairs when you're looking at Islam and thinking, hold the line, will you, for fuck's sake? Christ, how far right have I gone? But I mean, I can see it in that way. I just don't want them in this country, but I can respect them for being a reactionary force. And I came across these people, you know, like Jonathan Bowden said that Julius Evola would have been kind of, he was so right wing that he would have thought that Islam was a bit degenerate, because they had satellite dishes on the side of their tents and stuff in the Middle East. And I can kind of see the point. I can kind of understand it actually now. But you do think, what's become of me that I hate the modern world to this degree? Christ Almighty! So the Christian element is an interesting one for me, because I think, well, yeah, it is in the history of the West for thousands of years. Is it possible that we can have some sort of rejuvenation of that? Will people move to it as a reaction against the modern world? Not so much the just mass immigration, that would have to be, and I know that's a hot topic because of the universalism, and there's everybody gets bored with the debate, I think, to be honest. But as a sort of just not being a degenerate freak with purple hair and cutting your tits off and all the rest of it, can they hold the line on that? And it's interesting to me to see that coming back into play a little bit on the right.
You are getting quite a resurgence, and what does give me a bit of hope, if you can take one white pill from this, but all of the younger Catholic men I know have gone into the faith. Normally they're converts, they're not cradle Catholics, but they go in, they learn the Latin, and they tend to reject, because when people think Catholicism, they think of this current Pope who's a Jesuit, which... a bit shadowy, a bit echoey. We'll put it like that. I won't go into fucking Vatican politics because it's a headache. But you're getting the sort of younger generation of Catholics coming in and sort of realizing that everyone's idea, what you've been taught about what Jesus said in school, like, oh, love everyone, love your neighbor, love, you know, forgive everyone. It's always out of context. It's almost always completely paraphrased. It's like when people say, oh, he who cast, let him without sin cast the first stone. They always like to quote that. Whenever you tell someone that it's a bad idea to be fucking cutting their cock off and turning it inside out or doing drugs or, you know, rutting in the streets like a fucking dog, that's always the one they like to throw back, oh, don't judge. Then Jesus also said, go forth and sin no more. It's not a fucking carte blanche to just do whatever you like and know that you're forgiven for it. That's not how it works. And I think that's the sort of impression that a lot of people have got from modern Catholicism. But there is a sort of shift back towards the older style. You know, the concept of mortal sin, the concept of proper penance. And I'm seeing that a lot more. And I don't know, I have no idea what the numbers are or the demographics are. And a lot of these Catholics won't ever identify themselves as alt-right. But if you ask them their political beliefs, it's always invariably a form of national socialism or theocratic fascism. And I sort of tend to fall somewhere in between the two there. But numbers-wise, it's going to be a hell of a fucking struggle because I think the Catholic population in England is about something like 11%. And the Muslim population is, I think, 5%. And going by, you know, sort of the way the land lies as well and the rate that they're having kids and the sort of way that their traditionalism is enforced, because there's no sort of middle ground with them. You don't get to be a liberal Muslim. You're either a fucking Muslim or you're a liberal. It's one of the two.
But, I mean, yeah. The problem is the Muslims just seem to come straight at you. I mean, they've got a few lobby groups, and yeah, they are quite in your face. But they aren't the ones who are sort of wriggling their way into positions of education and then kind of paying off people to enforce, like, teach transsexualism to 5-year-olds. That's another group who we can't fucking talk about on YouTube. Another reason why I've sort of taken interest in this was I saw a meme. I think it's like maybe the distributist posted on Twitter or something, and I thought it was interesting. And this is my like inevitable Lord of the Rings reference that I always get into hangouts. And it had a picture of Frodo, and he was saying the ring's too strong. So the ring of power, the ring of corruption, it's too strong. I can't stand, you know, somebody do something about it. And then it had a picture of Peter Hitchens saying the problem's not the ring. The problem is you, because you can't resist it. And I thought that was very interesting, because what they're saying is that the you've got to be immunized to the poison. The culture has to be immunized to the poison. Instead of just constantly blaming who's dripping the poison in, can we not somehow immunize ourselves against it? And I look at some, that's why I'm looking at this sort of resurgence, this reactionary resurgence of Catholicism, and thinking, is there something to that? Can it be done? And the people that I talk to are definitely like very normal. I think that's interesting, actually.
It is. I mean, I'm probably going to piss off like half of the fucking people watch. I don't know, but you've got a lot of the sort of neo-pagans on the alt-right. And for fuck's sake, boys, it's not happening. You know, Catholicism has a foundation in Europe that goes back thousands of years. It's fought for it. It's defended it. There is a structure. There is a hierarchy. Yeah, we've got a shit pope. at the moment. I'm not happy with the Pope at the moment. Unfortunately, we don't get to fucking vote for it. And there is a bit of infiltration, subversion. It's going to happen. It's a big fucking target, because if you look historically, one of the most sort of ardent rivals of that group has been the Catholic Church throughout the 109 countries and all that. They've always had sort of quite strong Catholic populations. And there is a bit of historical grudge sort of going back and forth there.
Yeah. Yeah, it is, yeah. And whenever you look at the sort of GK Chesterton type writers, you look at the Wikipedia page and they're always like being called out for being anti-Semites every time, actually. And there's this, it's like, oh, the Catholic Church has always had a problem against the moneylenders. But I mean,
I wonder why. Yeah, have you seen The Passion of the Christ?
Yeah, there's two ways to look at that, isn't there? But yeah, and I know Dave Yorkshire's, and I'm sorry for everybody in the chat. I'm not an expert on this. I'm trying to keep up. There's questions and everything. But maybe at some time I'll do a one solo, and I'll just address the chat directly. Yeah, of course, Dave Yorkshire's in the chat, and he's not a big fan of Catholicism at all. And so, for somebody like me, and I am cowardly on the fence, I'm sort of the liberalist in this situation, because I just can't, I'm not interested in that. All I need is the country sorted out and to sit with my fishing rod on the northeast coast, and I'll be quite happy, actually. I'm not going to worry that much. I just want these problems solved, and whoever's got the best solutions is okay with me.
No, that's a fair point. I mean, if I got my fucking ideal government tomorrow, if I got elected fucking emperor or whatever, it wouldn't be a case of enforcing everyone to go in church and all that. But you'll have a really hard time on the right finding an issue with Catholic morality. There's no sort of moral teaching. I mean, you say the Ten Commandments and all that. Find something there that you can really disagree with. It's, aside from the theological points of like graven images, no other gods, if you're into that religious freedom stuff. But you'll be really hard-pressed to find an actual moral point that you disagree with. There might be something about, there might be some on the right that agree with eugenics or abortion, and I vehemently oppose that. I don't care. That's one thing I'll never compromise on.
I mean, the abortion, just to kind of switch gears a bit, the abortion issue is something that I've sort of blogged about and with Richard Dawkins. It was one of the biggest blog posts I ever did, because I just thought it was absolutely disgusting, this attitude. And it's what we're getting into, where before, and I did this video a few days ago as well, and it's not enough to be, I heard the term from a kind of reactionary type a few years ago. He disappeared, but he was saying the alt-right are basically, you're making quite a bit of noise there, Jackson.
Sorry, mate. I was just fucking, sorry, I forgot to mute.
And this fella said the alt-right at the time were basically just a bunch of racist liberals. And I thought that was an interesting point to make. And what he meant was that if essentially you're psychologically, metaphysically within the liberal paradigm, it's just that you're calling out another group who you don't want in your territory, which is fair point, but it does raise a lot of questions where you are still just a liberal objecting to another, in this case, another group. We have to start and think, is it that we have to find a completely different way to view the world rather than just constantly objecting to this or that or the other, where it's just a philosophy of negation, and instead have something completely new?
Well, that's exactly what it seems to be like with the sort of civic nationalists as well, right? They all go, they've identified one particular enemy And then all of a sudden, their whole worldview, every single thing that opposes that particular enemy, whether they agree with it or not, that's now what they believe. Like gay rights, you know, Tommy Robinson will be fucking talking about gay rights. You have, what's it, Katie Hopkins talking about the plight of a certain group. All of these things that no actual nationalist should care about have just become, well, they've become ammunition against what they see as the enemy. And that's how it's become so fucking diluted. It's this whole sort of faulty idea of the enemy of my enemy is my friend. Because it's not. It's as simple as it's not. You're feeding your fucking enemy with one hand and shooting the enemy with the other. It's the way I've always looked at it. It's probably a really shit way of putting it, but
I mean the idea that this is the Tommy Robinson thing. Okay, we can kind of say he's taking on the establishment and that's interesting, but the general position which is opposed to Islam is, of course, it's the polar opposite to what I was getting into before. They are then sort of criticizing Islam, but from the perspective of liberalism, and they're saying that Islam is mean to Jewish people and it's mean to the gays. And it's mean that it's not very nice for women and all of the rest of it. They're essentially criticizing Islam as liberals. But the problem is, it was liberalism that got us into this shit in the first place. Liberalism has played out. There's nowhere left for it to go.
Yeah, it was liberalism and individualism. It was this whole worship of the self. Because I don't think Islam would have ever got the traction that it did if we had a sort of strong cohesion, a strong white cohesion, a strong Christian cohesion, whatever, as long as we had that fucking cohesion in the first place. It's like it sort of slipped in, this subversion has slipped in and found a sort of chink in the armor. And then from then on in, it's just grown outwards.
Yeah, and I mean, at least in the past, they did just kind of come to the borders of Europe with an army and say, let's have it out. Now it's different because now we've got the third group who are saying, this is your strength. You have to let them in. And it's going to be wonderful. It's going to be like a rainbow coalition and you're going to celebrate each other's diversity. The most preposterous load of bullshit you can imagine. And so now the people are in that they've got and it was liberalism that let that happen as well. I mean, I can't stand the arguments of liberals. I mean, I know people are going to think, oh no, he's going off on one again, but because I'm trying to stop like constantly slagging classic liberalism off, but the Enlightenment and classic liberalism has, in the end, that's what's fucked us. And the idea that you're going to build a big YouTube channel that fucking, that website Quillette is just absolute cancer. It's horrible because what it does is, I don't know if anybody reads it. There's the Jordan Peterson has backed it, and there's Claire Lehman. She is. And it's kind of hosted from Israel, I think. And they can see that the sort of social justice left is a bit cancerous and a bit problematic, as they would say. And so they've decided to have this extra bulwark. They fleshed it out, and they kind of cross post and help each other out. It's doing very well, and they're like sort of saying, well, we'll acknowledge the far right, as they call it, and we'll acknowledge the far left, but then we're going to explain why the centrist position is the best one to have. And it doesn't work because nobody believes that the center ground exists anymore. It's the same if you're a centrist, if you're a classic liberal, and you've just and you are now having to appeal, if you're no longer in the center and the people who control the center are, let's say, the cultural Marxists, and they no longer respect your right to freedom of speech, you're fucked. That's the end of your ideology. because what you're going to have to do then is appeal to an illiberal centre for your liberal rights, such as freedom of speech in this case. And they're just going to say no. They're just going to say no. And that's what we're seeing happening. All we hope that they can do is whinge on about it enough that it's sort of, you get this kind of populist mass uprising, which, to be fair, in Britain is kind of where we're going. We'll just have to see how it plays out.
Yeah, you're absolutely spot on. I mean, the whole thing with the centrist position is that you can see through history, there's one theory that seems to apply itself really well, which is the pendulum theory. And that's when there's a time of crisis. I mean, particularly within the past 100 or so years. But when there's a time of crisis, that political pendulum will tend to swing all the way to the right or all the way to the left. And either side is going to cut out the sort of liberal centre, because both sides invariably are going to require giving up of certain freedoms. And, you know, that's a sort of necessity of survival.
Yeah.
That's a hinge. To hinge your whole worldview on it and to think that there's a happy medium means it's like the same mistake when I came to London. I tried to apply my own sort of set of rules to people that did not give two fucks, and I paid the fucking price for it. And that's what these people are setting themselves up for. I mean, they might feel good about themselves at the end of the day, knowing that they've taken no position on anything worth meaning, but it's not going to affect any change. There's no, I can think of very few countries in Europe that would benefit from a centre government, especially the way we are at the moment.
Well, and if you're going to have the free speech platform, you know, from the centre as well, it just means that all you're going to do is platform people who want to tear your civilization down. And I was hauled over the coals for saying that I wouldn't entertain that whatsoever. I'd shut them up. If somebody's a threat to your civilization, their subversion is the word here. If somebody's trying to subvert your civilization, you've got to just shut them up.
I've said the exact same. I said basing the whole argument on freedom of speech is an absolute waste of time, because no matter how much you speak, no matter what you say, you can have a massive platform, etc. But we know the third group is going to have the money. They're going to have more money than the man with a million subscribers. They're going to have more tricks up their sleeve. You can be at Speaker's Corner, you know, saying, giving the most firebrand Mosley-esque speech you can. But these people can still be subverting you. They can be hiring thugs to kick the shit out of you. They can be fucking hiring people to talk over you.
Yep.
There's no reason to give your enemies the tool to destroy you. It's not pragmatic. It doesn't make any sense.
Exactly. I'm going to take a break for 1 minute. Just carry on talking if you want. I'll be back in 1 minute.
Right, fuck, this is going to be interesting because I can't actually see the chat. Hang on, 2 seconds. Oh, fuck it. I wish you'd fucking warn me, to be honest. Everyone hear me all right, or I'm muting myself? Hey, watch your cyborg, you all right? I found out to get on the chat. Real pagan religions are not universalist because... I'll tell you what, David Yorkshire, we can argue with this if you want to send me a fucking message or something on Twitter. We need theocratic racial fascism. I agree. Codriano was great. Shame he was orthodox, but, you know, no one's fucking perfect. What's your Stevie? Yeah, I'm seeing some people that subscribe to me. I'm not even going to pronounce that, but thank you, whoever that is.
Right, hey.
I'm back.
Right, there's a great chat tonight, I have to say. There's been some super chats, and I just want to say thank you very much again. Christian Bell, Morgoth, I have completed 6 hours of my documentary work and I post you the links. I don't know. You'll have to send us an email or something. I don't know what that's about. Let's have a look, because I have kind of... I'm trying to be a proper YouTuber here. $2. J.B. Peterson is a whack. Yep, he is.
Yep.
Endeavour, hello Endeavour. Would you agree that the one good thing communism ever did was that it saved Eastern Europe from 44 years of liberalism from 1945 to 1989? Yes, I would, actually. Yes, I would. And in fact, I would go further and say that that kind of socialism is something that the right, not communism, which was sort of aesthetically dead and soulless, but the socialism isn't as bad as what these kind of Catholics would have you believe. The right wingers would have you believe. What I've seen is lately is that the normal. Could you just mute yourself there for a second, Jackson? Because what I've seen is that in America, the alt-right seems to be in a bit of a mess, but they are starting to get to some proper nationalist kind of economics, which is more on the left. It's a funny thing, because I was in a social club last week, a working men's social club, and there was this mixture of obviously they kept the money within the social club. It was based on a membership and a committee, and it was prone to a little bit of corruption, the way that is a sort of a feature of socialism, but of capitalism as well. But of course, the women were barred from the bar. And so I do think that these sort of a socialist economics policy, which is based on sending them, not profits being creamed off the top and going off to sort of money lenders all over the world on the globalist grid, but staying in house is how you turn the situation around from a material point of view. The spiritual side of it is, and the metaphysical side of it is kind of what we've been getting into tonight, and that's actually where we there's so much disagreement. There's more disagreement on that than over the actual economics of it. The worst thing that's ever happened to right wing politics was that it became shackled to international finance. You think of Thatcher, neoliberalism, and everything else. Because what the Tory party today, they get to own all of the shit things about society, like people going to food banks, whereas the left get to keep all of the goodies, all of the sort of feel-good issues go over to the left. And so the only thing that you can vote for is being a selfish sort of greedy bastard, or just a wage slave who wants to keep a bit more money over. It's not good enough. What's your views on that, Jackson?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely... I mean, I try not to think about economics too much because, fuck, it's a headache. But I see exactly what you mean by that, and I think one of the other worst things that the right has ever done was sort of conceded the sort of economic compassion to the left. It's like it seems to be the view that it's only the left wing that care about the homeless, that care about the hungry, that care about the needy, the NHS. And these have always been sort of famously branded as left-wing policies. And I think that was the worst thing we could have ever done, because now, no matter what sort of right or conservative you are, even if you're just a sort of moderate conservative, unless you're a full-on socialist but with national in front of it, you're always going to sort of be under the scrutiny of them, that it's all capitalist. I mean, capitalism has just seemed to somehow have been affixed as a staple with the right. And it never had to be that way. And I don't know why it was ever accepted to be that way. Because nationalists, I mean, civic, ethnic, whatever, your primary concern of your nation should be your people. And that would involve a completely different system from communism, and it would involve a completely separate system from sort of consumer capitalism, where you're not a name, you're a number.
Yeah, I mean, I get sick of seeing this retarded argument as well, and it's another sort of centrist thing where it's like there's a and on the sort of conservative right where they'll say, well, National Socialism was well left wing because they've got socialist in the name, and I just think it, and I think I see this stuff on something like Twitter, and I just think, oh, you fucking retards, because what they don't understand is that from a sort of a nationalist traditionalist perspective, economics is just a tool to be used to further the betterment of the people. Whereas, let's say the Tories or Labour, all they really do, and I'm just singling them out as being, but the same goes for the centrist in general. The general discourse today, if you take something like feminism, for example, it's mainly centered on equal pay, and all women actually getting the same amount of pay, and should, and they think they're really clever, because then they'll pump out all these videos and it'll be like, well, actually women are not underpaid, it's just that they don't want to work as hard as men. It's all of it is stuck in this materialistic paradigm. What you're looking, but from our perspective, economics is just a tool to improve the people as a whole. Of course, they disagree with that because they would say there's no group to be improved, but just individuals. Which it's it and it, it so the kind of the degeneracy and the decay just keeps going on and on, because then you have to argue it from an individual perspective. But National Socialism is the idea that the money, the wealth generated by the people will then go back in from the top back down into the people. And this is, I mean, I'm saying that because it's got socialist in the title, but this should be just a standard nationalist dissident right talking point. We're not capitalists. It's a third position, essentially. The third position is the right one, the real one.
Yeah, exactly right. And it's the whole thing of the minute you say socialist, it's this clever sort of these clever little tricks of language. It's like the minute you say fascist, people think Nazi. The minute you say socialist, people think communist. They always go to the sort of the very extremes of what each are. I mean, I think my favorite one was Stephen Crowder's one of how Adolf Hitler was a liberal socialist. I thought that was fucking hilarious, but
A
okay.
liberal socialist.
Yeah, it's one of those, I think it's one of those prove me wrong things. I don't know. I just saw the title and practically pissed myself laughing. But it was how Hitler was a liberal socialist. Or no, it was Hitler was a left-wing socialist or a left-wing liberal, something along those lines.
Yeah, it's this sort of sad left-right dichotomy, and it's utterly retarded. And I think what when to get back to what we were saying before, if we can spread awareness around into European people that there's something fundamentally wrong with the society, that is where your base is for a nationalist movement, actually. So you can explore that through religious ideas and things. But it is so that the problem is the fact that we have the left-right dichotomy, which is entirely materialistic. Like that is the problem, rather than, well, I want to have more individualism. I want to have more free speech. I want to have equal rights. No, that's all bullshit. The problem is that their arguments themselves and how prominent they are the problem. Because it's just like this, it's like having calipers stuck to your head that squeeze it day in, day out. I watched I mean, this week, I get in from work and I have a look, what's the news of the day? And the fastest way to do that is to go on Twitter and look at what's trending. And it's sort of like every day I went on, and it was like something to do with race, multiculturalism, or political correctness in each of these cases. It was Diane Abbott. It was Amber Rudd saying she was a coloured person. You're not allowed to say that anymore. Though you're all allowed to say she's a person of colour. I don't know what the fucking difference is. isn't a four person of colour was the new politically correct term?
Oh, fuck. I can't even, mate. This is the thing, you just can't keep up with it.
Yeah, that's the point. It's just this sort of like barbed wire just rubbing through your fucking brain day in, day out.
That's the idea, though. That's the idea, is just to make it so incessant that it becomes second nature to bring up the most petty bullshit that you can. And it just whittles you away. And it is demoralizing. You know, you'll hear of someone being fired for making a gollywog joke about 30 years ago or something like that. And it's just a constant effort just to grind you down and demoralize you. It's miserable.
And you can understand why, like, the new Game of Thrones trailer has got like 10 million views or whatever it is. So, because people just want to opt out. I'll opt out and keep my mouth shut and trying to escape into some fantasy world. I totally understand that. And that's why I actually get into that stuff quite a bit. Because I do understand that it's where they're going. I mean, unfortunately, it looks like we're going to end up with a queen, who's going to sit on the Iron Throne. But I'm not gonna bore everybody to death. I'll get more downvotes if I start rambling on about that. It is just this constant churning through, and the kind of clickbait. I've got to get this mentality. I've got to get an article out. I've got to get a tweet out. I've got to get a YouTube video out. And so something horrible happens, you know. So these really awful things happen, like the Jody Chesney murder. And you think of it where it's a sort of, you've got a 12-hour window. Because I know this, because I've been, especially with the blog in the early days, I was well aware of this. I'm not so bothered about it now. But, and it's like, okay, so this girl was stabbed to death. It was reported that it was two black men, but the name that comes out now is looking more like it was a Eastern European. But in any case, the it's like this pressure's on, right? I've got to get content out there. I'll get a headline up, and then I'll shout into a microphone for 5 minutes, and I'll get it up on social media for the clicks. And this all plays into it, and I'm thinking, and if he doesn't get it done on time, he's going to be behind the times, and it's going to be a dead story. And I think this way of looking at the world, where you see the world through a social media trend, is fucking rancid, to be honest, you know. I'm still thinking of those two girls in Morocco who were raped and beheaded before Christmas.
It's fucking awful, wasn't it?
I'm still traumatized by that, even though it's what they would think of as being dead news. It's long gone, and it isn't. But you need, if you take a step back, there's a lot to be said about it still. But you just churn on. What's the next trend? What's the next? People like Paul Joseph Watson have become millionaires off this shit. It's really depressing. Really depressing. It's like where everything is sort of ramped up to fever pitch all of the time. My dad said that about the Daily Mail. It's like everything's at the world's about to burst. The world's about to end every day with the Daily Mail. And with social media, it's actually much worse. It's the same kind of thing.
It is. It's just an absolute non-stop stream of information. And it comes a case of filtering out what is bullshit and what is there for clicks. And somewhere along the line, the two have merged. And you've got the most fucking ridiculous clickbait shit. I mean, I don't know if you see it going around Twitter, but what's it called? Snapchat.
I don't know what that is.
Oh, it's some fucking app that the youngsters use. But I think it's commonly used by a sort of age 12 to 18. And it's just a constant stream of BuzzFeed tier shit. And it's the most perverse, degenerate stuff there is. And it's like, are they meeting a quota or are they meeting an agenda? Or is it a bit of both? It's absolute fucking madness when it comes to that. I mean, you have to really sift through. I mean, I stopped reading the Daily Mail ages ago. I stopped reading The Express because it's written like shit. But it's literally like sieving through it to try and actually find something that's factual anymore.
Yeah.
You'll get opinion piece after opinion piece after opinion piece, which gives itself the fact. I mean, the thing with The Guardian is the worst one for it, because they'll have whole fucking articles on their little opinion column thing. I can't read The Guardian. It'll probably give me a seizure at this point. But you've got these opinion pieces disguised as news, and where everything's just being thrown at you so quick, it's that sort of consume mentality. Consume this, buy this, do this. This is what you need to be happy. Consume this. You don't have time to actually stop and process what you're being fed. It bleeds into you without you knowing. And that is, pragmatically, it's absolutely fucking genius, and it doesn't happen by accident. Things like this don't happen by accident. We all know there's an agenda behind the curtains. There's no.
Yeah, we know, especially with The Guardian. I mean, the thing with The Guardian, I never read The Spectator or The Daily Mail, never, or The Telegraph. But I will read The Guardian, and especially the opinion pieces, because it's like I know that's the direct enemy. I'm not going to bother reading the right-wing press, because that's just diluted versions of what I can get on The Guardian. At least on The Guardian, I can have a look at my enemy and sort of look at his plans and see what he's up to, whereas the rest of it is just sort of watered down version of what you get on The Guardian. They're all weak, they're all conservatives, or they're all sort of just waiting for The Guardian to sort of the agenda that The Guardian's promoting will find them eventually. That's the state of the British right-wing press, and I just think that pathetic and I despise them all. At least with The Guardian, I can think, okay, they haven't a clear agenda. They hate my fucking guts. I'm everything they hate. So let's see what they've got to say. And I've even got a section on this channel called Hate Reading The Guardian. I wish I had time to do more, but I haven't. But anyway, just to get back to the Daily Mail as well, there was a headline up today saying that Diane Abbott fears that she's going to be abducted by far-right extremists and raped. she fears that it's going to be like a Joe Cox. By the way, Joe Cox wasn't raped. But okay, and Diane Abbott's just so sexy. I mean, Christ, who can resist? And she says that she'll end up in somebody's house, and they're gonna have pictures of her all over the walls, and that she's gonna end up being raped, murdered by a far-right extremist. And I thought, fucking hell, are you fucking kidding? Are you pulling my There's a little bit of wishful thinking there, sweetheart, isn't it?
Oh, fuck it. It's like reading one of them filthy fucking erotic fiction fantasies of Diane Abbott.
It's horrible, because you get them at the like a mental picture of Diane Abbott naked. I cannot help it. It's the way the brain works. Just seeing it, and you think, oh no, I've got those mental images. Fucking hell, I'm gonna have to think of waterfalls for 6 months to get that fucker out. But
I have enough demons in my nightmare, but
it's the perception. they think of that. So we're talking all night about, like, say, religion and spirituality, and the argument about that is it Catholicism? And then, you know, you've got Dave Yorkshire giving the critique of that, which is standard in our circles. We all know the rift there, but it is in the end about people just finding some sort of inner peace. That's what we're actually trying to do. And yet their perception, the establishment perception of us, is that like we're going to put pictures of Diane Abbott all over the house and then abduct her and rape her and murder her. Like, that's how they view us, when in actual fact, it's really about, oh God, how can we find some kind of relaxing life where these fuckers will just leave us alone? It's sad, it really is.
That's all I want. I just want to be out of the fucking urban hellscape with a wife and a few kids, somewhere quiet where I can go to work and feed my family. I do not want to think of Diane Abbott or fucking Jeremy Corbyn hanging out the back of her. That is probably on my list of life goals. It's not even in the top million.
Millennial Wars in the chat says 50 Shades of Black. Right, so let's have a look at what's going on in the chat then. We'll have a little bit of a break. Look at them. Yeah, so they're all having a bit of a laugh. 50 Shades of Black, Where the World's There. It's a good night tonight, a nice stream. Thanks for turning up, everybody. I don't know, there's a lot of ha-ha-ha's having to scroll through them. Hating the God, Way of the World's in there. I look forward to seeing it. Yeah, everybody's having a good bit crack on. Nice time all round. Nice way to spend a Saturday night, I have to say. So I really like your video that you did about the when you went walking in nature. That was your last one, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was. I'm on a bit of hiatus at the moment because of personal circumstance, which I won't go into it, but. Yeah, that one was. I have you to sort of thank for that as well, because I watched your fishing for white pills video, and you know the circumstance behind that, and you know. But, yeah. I watched that video, and I just sort of sat there and thought to myself, like, "Fuck, I haven't gone fishing. I mean, I'm not exactly a proper fisherman. I don't own my own rods or anything, but I thought I haven't been fishing with my mates for ages." And I sort of started to look around and I was just thinking, this is absolutely fucking nightmarish. This is 1984, but without a strong government. And the propaganda doesn't even have the decency to be in your face. So I thought, you know what? Pack up after me night shift, get out of my fucking uniform, go for a walk. And I sat there and I sort of, you reflect a little bit and you realise that it's almost like everything you've been told is bullshit. You don't need to be rich. You don't need to have the latest smartphone. You don't need to have, you know, designer fucking Ben Shermans or whatever. A family, a few mates, and somewhere outside of the fucking concrete hellscape, and you're pretty much set. I don't think anyone has ever been on their deathbed and thought, I wish I'd got the latest smartphone before I fucking died.
Nope. No, they don't. No, they don't. And I mean, I'm a little bit lucky because I am up in the arse end of nowhere. But nevertheless, the suicide problem, and as I said in that video, not all. I mean, there was a few people commenting and said, "Oh, hold on, you know, I know somebody who was happily married, he had a couple of kids, and we didn't see it coming." Yeah, that's true as well. That happens as well. But just in my ones, it was a really sort of from my personal take, they did have that in common. Because I've been in the situation as well, probably more than most, I was just talking before, where you're constantly sort of scrolling around on social media. And I snapped myself out of that a couple of years ago. I bought a beach caster a few years back and I went down with a dog, and it was frustrating as fuck because I didn't know how to put the line on the reel and all of that. Don't worry, I'm not going to bore everybody to death with me kind of in a circle get bored to death with me fishing stories. I'm not going to do it on a live stream. But yeah, it really sorts your head out. And it's weird because I remember, you know, you come across people and they're saying, oh, well, lift weights and go out jogging and all of that. And I think a lot of people think, yeah, I can't be arsed with that. And I can't be arsed with that. I'm not going to pay somebody to lift stuff up. I do it all fucking week. I'm not going to lift stuff. I'm not going to pay somebody to lift heavy things up. Fuck off. But the fishing thing, and I was down there with a fishing rod and I had the phone and I thought, yeah, I'll come on, look at this. I'll do it. In an ideal world, I could stick my face on there and just, you know, just be yourself. But of course, that's the problem. I'm on Hope Not Hate website. They'll be banging at my door and phoning up the boss and all of that kind of stuff. That's what we have to deal with for just wanting to have a normal, healthy life.
That's it. That's for wanting to be left alone, to be allowed. I mean, if you just, the ultimate sort of black pill is sitting down and thinking, how the fuck have we got to this? Where a white man wanting to have a white family around his own people is all of a sudden on a par of being a fucking genocidal lunatic. Because no matter how much you cuck to them and say, oh, I'm just a civic nationalist, or you try and make excuses or whatever, they are going to brand you as the worst sort of monster for, you know, being not only basic human nature, but animal nature of being around your own. People want to be around their own. There's fish like African cichlids and South American cichlids. If you put them together, they will rip each other to pieces. There's no biological reason for it except for like colouring. That's the sort of way things go. It occurs everywhere. People like to stick with their own. And unless you deliberately try and break down barriers and mix people together, people will naturally segregate. And it's just become a case now that it's been whites that have been singled out for doing it.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And we all know why. I mean, one of the things that we can get off the hook now, I remember you go back about 2 or 3 years, and you are under this constant pressure to say of name the you know who, and nearly slipped up there, name the new you know who's, and we've actually passed that, I think, in our circles, where people know who you're talking about, and people know who exactly. What group of people I'm talking about as I'm speaking now. And so now we can kind of take that for granted. That's the default position, and then move on and sort of see what we'll talk about us for a little bit, you know? And it makes life a lot easier. And I don't know what they're going to do, because what they're going to say, you're not allowed to say you know who's. And so we can kind of get on board with that. But that was a lot of hard work, you know. We reached that critical mass of awareness over within our circles, I mean, and sort of the dissident right. And the alt-right at the time was pivotal in that as well, this sort of memetic onslaught. And I think it's time to kind of, okay, let's take a breather. And have a look at issues close at home and what it is that's gone wrong with us as well. It's what to point out the out groups who are sort of attacking us and undermining us is that's all well and good, fair enough. But we do have to look close at home. And when many people in our circles are just not living very happy lives, and mine's not perfect, but, you know, we get along, and I found a way to cope with it. It is valuable to do that, I think. And yeah. If it is just standing on a rocky outcrop with a dog and a fishing rod for a few hours on a weekend, and you can come back and you're really refreshed, and you think, right, what's next? And I like that. I like that.
It is. There's nothing nicer than fucking off to the forest for a few hours and swearing at the ducks. But that was my always problem with the whole white supremacy thing, is that it always focused on the good aspects, the creativity, the sort of architectural ingenuity, the culture. But it completely ignores the fact that, you know, there's back to Babylon. Everyone has their strengths. Everyone has their weaknesses. And we seem to be so open to subversion and guilt more than any other race. And eventually that's going to be our downfall. That's a proper Achilles heel. I mean, I've never heard an Arab apologize for the Arab slave trade. I've never heard a fucking African apologise for the African organ trade or human trafficking. It's something that's not done. It is completely unique to the whites.
I'm thinking about doing a video on this. So you know, I'm giving away all my best ideas on live streams here, on the live. But one of the things is it's interesting to look at is the. You can tell I'm kind of relaxed and I've had a whiskey. I'm ruminating now. I'm relaxed and I'm ruminating. When you look at the Japanese. And Aria, and the Aria's in the chat, and she's going to know exactly what I'm saying here because I've talked about this with her in private. When you look at the Japanese after World War II, what you'll find about Japanese culture is that they had this kind of fixation on technology and destruction, and it mixing in with like the human form. And Godzilla would be an example of that. So Godzilla is where this kind of ancient force from nature comes back because of a nuclear blast and wreaks havoc and imposes this sort of existential threat. And another one is Akira, where you literally have the sort of melding of metal and technology in the form of this boy who takes out the city and then like 40 years later takes out Tokyo and then 40 years later does it again with Neo Tokyo. Now the point here is that that's a manifestation of what's happening within the Japanese mindset after the Hiroshima and Nagasaki. There's a lot more to it than that. You see it in video games like Final Fantasy. But what's important is that the Japanese have the means because they're in control of their own culture. So at a sort of metaphysical level, the Japanese can then work through what's going on in that collective identity and express it in cultural ways like that. So something like Godzilla or Akira is like that. But the problem for Europeans, and it's World War II again, but the problem is the first thing is, so our original guilt, let's say, the trauma of World War II was actually, it became the Holocaust, and then it was perpetuated. But the problem was that we weren't in control of the culture, so it was somebody else's vision. And this is what cripples us. This is what absolutely destroys us, and it's the inability to live within a metaphysical existence, which is for ourselves. Because if that was the case, we wouldn't have this. We wouldn't have this guilt, I don't think, at all. And you can say, well, you had the American slavery and the British Empire, but that they are like sort of offshoots of the original sin of the Holocaust. And we're not able to work these things through. And today it's the case where that same system is just in direct opposition to us. And this is the problem. And they understand it as well, which is why they're trying to censor the internet, because they know we've sort of found a way around that. So that was me a post that I've just given away there, a video I was going to make, which I didn't.
Yeah, no, it's... I mean, that's a problem with live streams of people of our sort of political thing is I find it so fucking hard to disagree with anything you say, and I've just been nodding along the whole time. You put it really well. But the interesting thing, like you said, with Japan is the fact that they've got this sort of cultural... You know, I never actually thought of Godzilla the way that you said it until you actually said it like that. And I thought, oh, yeah, shit, that makes a lot of sense. But the thing is with Japan, where it's such a homogenous society, any little roots of any discrepancies or aberrations in that society are quite easy to isolate. I mean, yeah, they do weird shit with octopuses and stuff. Don't get me wrong. That's their sort of thing. But when you've got a society that's that homogenous, and Japan, I think, has quite a strong justice system as well. I know they've still got hanging, and they are actually willing to use that power. In the West, where we are such an absolute clusterfuck of ethnicities and religions, it is really, really easy to point to a particular group of society. Like, going back to knife crime, we know that it is a majority of the black community. But our solution, instead of, I mean, in the same world, the solution would be, okay, in these areas where there are more black youths and they are more likely to carry, or more urban youths, black or white, whatever, that are more likely to carry knives, in a sane society, we would increase the amount of stop and search. We would give the police more power to detain, more power to search properties, etc. But instead, we've done the absolute opposite. Because for some reason, somewhere along the line, and I don't know who it was, has decided that the right not to be offended is somehow trumped the right not to be stabbed to death in the street. And again, going back to the sort of agendas and that, is I can't see this being an accident. I will ascribe malice. I will ascribe malice to it rather than just, complacence. Because these people above us are fucking intelligent and they know what the consequences of this are going to be. And yet it's happened anyway. I don't think it's complacency anymore. I think there is a genuine concerted push to radically change us and our demographic to the point where, well, we're something completely different.
Yeah, well, the intelligentsia, the sort of Guardian Easter types, the Owen Joneses, they probably do believe it. They are the quintessential useful idiots to be bumped off, and we can have a laugh at the centrists and stuff, but the sort of Sargon's right when he calls out the turf war that's going on. So, you know, you go back 10 or 15 years and it was the lesbian agenda, and they are now being literally jailed for disagreeing with the trans agenda type people, whatever you call them, transvestites.
Wrong uns will do.
Yeah. So what's happened there is a classic example of somebody on high deciding that lesbians are now a problem, lesbian feminists are a problem, and they've got to be bumped off. They've got to be shut up. And the reason for that, actually, it fascinates me. And Mrs. Morgoth was at great pains, because I just couldn't wrap my head around this at all, because they were all in this camp victim. And I thought, okay, I get that. But with the problem is that if a bloke, and we literally had to spell this out in these terms, because I just couldn't, right, so what does it matter? What does it matter if a lesbian, she's a victim, and an intergender male is a victim, but the male thinks he's a woman? What's the problem? Why can't they get along? And the reason why they can't get along is that if the male who's dressed up like a woman and he demands that you call him a woman, then the lesbian it negates her lesbianism, because it's this thing where, well, women have cocks now. Well, a lesbian doesn't want cock. She wants a fanny. And so she's ending up having to explain to a man in a dress, yeah, but you've got a cock and not a fanny, and I like fannies. The big thing of the moment is to protect the man in the dress and not the lesbian. So the lesbian is less radical, because she's only like one step removed from a normal sexual identity, but the man in the dress is two or three steps removed from it, so he gets the backing of the establishment, and it's the lefty who goes to jail for sending out an insulting tweet. That's the So yeah, the useful idiots are being bumped off, and you can see now they all were. And if any of them's listening to this, they all were. You are all useful idiots. So what you should do is convert to Catholicism and complain that the Arab Muslims have put satellite dishes on their tents.
So, whatever happened to Occam's razor, right? Simplest explanation being the best one. This left wing thing is, I mean, it's funny to sit there and look and laugh at it, at these turfs and whatever, you know, argued about fucking cocks and beards and what constitutes a woman, when everyone knows the fucking answer anyway. It's just willful delusion. And then you sort of stop and think, is like when they're done killing each other over microtransgressions or whatever the fuck they call it, or whatever stall they piss in. And if they have that sort of power to go after each other like the way that they do now, the power to eat each other the way they do, it does sort of sober you and think, we're in a bit of shit here.
Yeah, we're in a big, big bit of shit. I think we'll wrap up. But I think we can get around it. When we talk about it in a sort of bantering way like this, and not sort of acting like retards and sort of, you know, all the drama and all the shit. It does kind of get on your nerves. And I mean, there's some people in the chat saying I should do this every week. I don't know about that, but I can definitely dust off the Hangout section of my YouTube channel a bit more often than I do. But I'm not going to sort of get myself all wrapped up. And like tonight's example would be a sort of pagan versus Catholicism debate. We haven't got fucking time for these arguments. Look at the mess we're in. There's probably more gay trannies in the country than what there is of us, for Christ's sake. Get your fucking house in order. What we do need is a different way of being and a different way of looking at the world. But I'm happy to call it a day. What I'm trying to avoid here is that when you see it on your YouTube recommends. And it's like somebody's just had a live stream of like 4.5 hours, and you think, oh, fuck that. Who's got 4.5 hours to spend listening to a couple of blokes moan about the world? So I think an hour and a half's a nice time to put a bookmark in it, as somebody once said. Are you all right with that, Jackson?
No, I've got no problem with that at all, mate. It's been an absolute pleasure.
All right. You got any parting shots?
You know what? I'll be a cunt. Fuck pagans.
Oh, dear me. Oh, no. I'm happy they're not controlling YouTube. They'll have the channel taken down. All right. I'll see you later, folks. Thanks for watching.